Next speaker is Fernando Brandão. He's going to tell us about boundary states and entanglement spectrum from strong subadditivity.
Thank you. Is it on? Yes. First, thanks to the organizers for putting this together. We're learning a lot. What I want to talk is joint work with Kotaro Kato. He's a PhD student at the University of Tokyo, and we worked at this together at Microsoft when he was doing an internship there. It will be about a bunch of topics that I think they are relevant for high energy, and they're related to a lot of things that people study high energy, but they're not really about high energy. But I'm hopeful that maybe one of you have an idea about how to apply this to high energy after the talk, so please talk to me if you have. Before I start with what I want to tell you, let me just make an advertisement. So we have a program coming up next year at KITP on quantum physics of information. So there's a lot of overlap with it from qubit, but it's more general about applications of quantum information to physics. I'm a coordinator, Veronica, Stephen, and Renato, they are coordinators as well. So Veronica and Stephen is here, you can talk to them as well. Renato is coming, you can talk to him. Advisors, Daniel is an advisor, he's here. Patrick as well. John is an advisor, he's coming also next week. So we are all here, so just talk to us if you want to know more details about. So just a little bit from what we're saying here, right? So there's like this recent breakthroughs in the application of quantum information in other areas of physics, and they have served to increase the interest of researchers in high energy, in gravity, in condensed matter to work in the field. And what we hope is that the program will be a turning point in this exciting, rapid developed dialogue between quantum information and physics as a whole. So if this is something that is close to your heart, please do apply. And that's the most important thing. The deadline is pretty soon, actually. Even though the program is only next year, it's already October 2nd. Okay, so let's go to the talk. So I want to talk about properties of two-dimensional quantum states of many particles. And this is it's from qubit conference, so it will be formed by qubits. Okay, so it's like a bunch of qubits arranged in a two-dimensional lattice. And one of the things we want to study in this kind of systems is the scaling of entanglements in the system, right? So there are many ways to do that. One way is just to look at the entanglement entropy of a region, like region A here, with the rest of the system, the entanglement of A with A complement. And we know how to compute that. It's just the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix rho A in the region A. And now we're interested in understanding how this entanglement scales. And we know that if you just take like a state from the Haar measure here, or generically a state, the entanglement will scale extensively. It will scale as the volume of the region X or A here, right? That's like, you know, this famous calculation by Page from 93. But the question I want to address is, what's the behavior for entanglement entropy in interesting states of matter, right? So as you see, this generic behavior is not really what happens for physically relevant states, and I want to understand what happens for them. Okay, and then this is the concept of area law that we find. So again, we have the same setup as before. And what we observe in many interesting systems, like gap models or, you know, two-dimensional conformal field theories and so on, is that we have the following formula for the entanglement entropy of a region. So we have a region X, and then the entropy of the region X is scales as some constant alpha times the boundary of the region. So I'm seeing up X with A. Then perhaps with some additive constant, which is negative, and then some subleading terms that go to zero when the size of the region grows, okay? So we expect that to be pretty general. It's not always true to actually prove that's the case for interesting system is not an easy problem at all, but what we want to do is just assume that's the case, or at least consider the class of systems for which this is the scaling of entanglement in the system, and just see what are the conclusions, okay, what we can get out of it. Okay, so what is this gamma? This gamma is what we call topological entanglement entropy, and it should be non-zero whenever we have topological order in the system. So it's really, it makes sense to call it an entropy because it's the log of some dimension. And this dimension is what we call the quantum dimension of the system, is where, you know, all the interesting topological properties takes place. It's the Hilbert space of the topological order in the system. So in this sense, it's really a topological, it's like an entropy. This topological entanglement entropy is related to this non-local aspect of entanglement in the states. There are many, many results about that. I just want to mention two, which a little bit connect to what I'm going to present. One is that one-sided results, if this gamma is zero, there is no topological order, then indeed you can show, it's a result by Kitaev, it's not published, that you can adiabatically connect the state to a trivial phase. So that's like, no, the definition of the state being topologically trivial, right? So that's a good sanity test for gamma. Then there's another result by Isaac Kim that we have this bound. So log the number, you have a given state, you want to know whether you can have all the states which are topologically indistinguishable from these states. And we have this bound. Log of n, the number of states, is smaller than 2 gamma, where n is the number of topologically protected states. So again, if gamma is 0, you cannot have any topologically interesting property there. Okay, so, but that's like, maybe one drawback to this result is that one-sided. If gamma is non-zero, what can we say? They don't tell us anything. Yes. Sorry? So, right, good point. Sorry. Yes, so it's two-dimensional states, and you have to connect the reverse dual, yes. Yes, good point, yes, so, yeah. Yeah, the reverse dual exactly to cancel the chirality of that might be there, right? Okay, exactly, yes. So indeed you have to do that. Thank you. All right, then another thing that we will also touch is that there is this interesting bulk boundary correspondence in topological order systems. So basically, topological order in the bulk has some effect on the boundary of the system. And again, there are a lot of work here, and we'll touch on that a little bit. Okay. So the questions I want to consider first is what are the consequences of having an area law? And second, what's the influence of this topological entanglement entropy, in particular, on the boundary of the system? Okay, so these are the questions. So very roughly, the result I want to show you is that from this area law assumption, we can get that topological entanglement entropy determines the locality, in some precise sense I will tell you, both of the boundary states and of the entanglement spectrum of the system. Okay, so just starting from some assumption, which looks much milder, we'll get some stronger consequences. And what I think is nice is the proof is really just using very basic quantum information theory. It's basically using strong subadditivity of entropy, that we revise what it is, and some recently stronger subadditivity that we got, so some strengthening of strong subadditivity. Okay, and I'll tell you what this strengthening is. And I think it might be useful for other problems as well. So if you don't know, I think it's something nice to know. Okay, so just some basics. Okay, two slides of what I guess Patrick told us the first day or second day. So you want to distinguish one quantum state to the other, and we can use the fidelity for that. So it's a measure of distinguishability between two quantum states. So given two quantum states, we define their fidelity as follows. So the fidelity of rho and sigma is just trace rho half, sigma rho half, this to the power of half, okay? And it really tells us how distinguishable they are by any quantum measurement we can do. So the maximum the fidelity can be is 1. That's when the states are the same, right? It's easy to see. Then you cannot distinguish them, of course. The minimum is 0, and in that case, they are perfectly distinguishable, and you know, it varies in between. So this will be the measure we just use to tell how far apart two states are. It would be useful for us to use also some more entropic measure of distinguishability, and this is what we saw many times in this school array, is the relative entropy. So that's the definition. It's just trace rho minus log sigma. And has many interpretations. We see some of them. For example, it gives the optimal exponent for distinguishing the two states. What's important here is that there is this relation between relative entropy and fidelity. And what this relation basically tells us is that if the relative entropy is small, then the states are close. Okay, so it's just some other measure of distinguishability that has some nice properties, but you can just think as a measure of distinguishability, and that's it. Okay, so let's get to the results. So one thing that I want to tell you is that topological entanglement entropy that kind of is related to the locality of the boundary states. So what's the situation I want to consider? I want to consider some region A of the lattice, and I just want to consider some boundary around it. Okay, so composed of three parts here, X, Z, and Y. And then the formula that I'm going to show you how to derive is that assuming this kind of behavior of the entanglement entropy, we have a formula for gamma. So remember that this is like the subleading terms that goes to zero, okay? And the quality of the approximation goes with them, okay? So when they go to zero, this becomes exact. So what this formula says, it says that the gamma is equal to, you minimize over all Hamiltonians, one on x, y, the other on y, z, okay? So it's kind of, one is a Hamiltonian that only acts on x, y, the other is a Hamiltonian that only acts on y, z. And we look at the thermal state of this Hamiltonian, okay? So when gamma is non-zero, for example, it tells us that we cannot approximate this boundary state by a kind of a local thermal state, even when we cross-grain the system, like even when, you know, this each part is roughly of the region size. We can go more, and we can actually say that here we split into three regions, but we don't have to. We can split in any number of regions you want. And then we have the same result. Basically, these two things are equivalent. And basically, gamma is simply the relative entropy distance to the set of local Gibbs states in the lattice. Okay? So when gamma is zero, there is some thermal state of a local Hamiltonian that approximates the reduced state here. When gamma is non-zero, we cannot do that. There is some obstruction to having some local physical description of the boundary. No, it's not. So I'll tell you what it is later, but I can tell you already now. The Hamiltonian, the Gibbs states will be given by the maximum entropy states when you fix all the reduced density matrices here. And you can prove that this maximum entropy states is a Gibbs state of a local Hamiltonian. So it's, I'll give you more details later, but it's indirect. It's not yet. Okay, so that's one result. As I mentioned, right, some special case, if gamma is zero, then we can approximate the physics here by some local model. By the Gibbs state of some local model. Yes? Sorry, you want to? Yes? So I didn't understand what you said.
When you're now going to many regions rather than XYZ.
Yes. No. Gamma is still this additive correction to the area law, right? Oh, no, that's the thing. So, okay, good point, yes. I'm assuming some uniform area law here, right? So that's gamma and an alpha is independent of the choice of the region. Okay, and that's important. Yeah, good point. Thanks. This is like, you know, some strong assumption of area law that you could assume, but that we believe it's true many times. So, okay. So, yes. Sorry? No, so in the original quantum state psi, there is no Hamiltonian in it, only satisfies area law. That's all we need. Right, and then this Hamiltonian kind of emerge from the quantum state. Right, exactly, yeah. We have to minimize the role. Actually, in the end, I will give you explicitly what this guy is, but indeed, it's also the minimum. I will also tell you how to construct the minimizer here, but what you said is right. Yeah, but we will get there, yes. Yeah. Yes, you see, but what you said is exactly right, yes. Right, so another observation is that the thermal states will have the same, at least on-site symmetries as the original states. So that might be useful, maybe I'll tell you later more about it. And as I mentioned, the thermal state will be some kind of max entropy states consistent with the local constraints of the original state in this region. Okay. So that's actually like the main result I want to tell you is this equation. Now, you know, I'm a quantum information person, so I have to have Alice and Bob in my talk. So this is Alice Cooper. This is like Sandra Bullock with a Bob haircut. So. And so, and I want to tell you why it's interesting to have SUMP using the relative entropy, and that's because we can, we have I think a nice information theoretic interpretation of gamma, and which is saying that it gives you the number of non-local bits of the topological order state, right, on this boundary. So let me first tell you one of many interpretations of the relative entropy, the one I'm going to use here. So suppose you have Alice and Bob. They share EPR pairs, so they share entanglements as much as they want. And Bob knows rho, really knows the density matrix rho, and Alice knows rho, and Bob knows the density matrix sigma. And Bob can send some classical communication, and Alice can send some classical communication to Bob. Then the question is, what's the minimum classical communication required for Bob to learn rho, okay? So he doesn't know rho a priori, but he wants to learn with some information that Alice is going to give. And what I mean learn, I mean quantum learn, not to really learn the density matrix, but just be able to prepare one copy of the state rho. So what these people showed is that basically the answer is relative entropy, okay? Relative entropy is necessary and sufficient for Bob to prepare, like this number of bits of classical communication is necessary and sufficient. So really, right in the precise sense, relative entropy is how much uncertainty we have about rho, given that we know sigma, right? But I think that fits nicely with what we have, because what we have is that gamma is the minimum over local Gibbs states of this relative entropy, right? So what it's saying is that gamma is like, you know, the number of extra bits that we have to get, that we have to give for this local Gibbs state to be able to prepare one copy of the true state there in the topological order system, right? So it's the number of bits missing which are due to topological order. And that's again consistent with gamma that we see in any model, which is like log of the quantum dimension, right? So I think this gives like more reason to call gamma really an entropy. Okay, so that's just this interpretation. Now another application that I want to mention before explaining you how to prove this equality. Let me see, time. Oh, I didn't, maybe I use my phone. Okay. We have again our state as before, and now rho A, the reduced density matrix here, is a density matrix, so it has the eigenvalues form a probability distribution, and I call the eigenvalues by this, lambda of rho A, and they are what we call the entanglement spectrum, okay? They're just the distribution of all eigenvalues. And area law really is just a statement about one particular function of these eigenvalues, right? Namely this one, the entropy. And this already gives us interesting information about the system, but what can we say about the whole spectrum, right? Is it interesting? It has some more information about what's happening, so on. And many people study that. There was this first paper by Haldane and Lee and many others. And what they see and basically was like numerics, okay, so if they can do numerics for some systems and get some results, is that when gamma is zero, it should match the spectrum of a thermal state of a local model. When gamma is not zero, then it's not the case, but it matches the spectrum of a thermal state of a local model after we project into one of the topological super selection sectors. Okay, so usually there are not so many of them, so it's pretty much like thermal of a local model, where we have to do some projection first and then we get it. And now what I want to show you is how kind of recover these results in the setting that we are considering. Okay, so let's see how to do that. Now we have regions X prime. So let's pretend this is in a torus, okay, so there's like a closed boundary conditions. And let's assume some translation invariance here to make things simpler. So let's assume that the state on rho X is the same as on the state on rho X prime, on X prime. We don't have to, but it makes things simple. Then the result I want to show you is that, assuming again the area law, when gamma is zero, when there is no topological order, then I cannot say anything about one copy of rho x, but I can tell you something about two copies. And this is the same as just the spectrum of rho x tensor rho x, if you prefer to think like that. Then indeed this is very similar to the spectrum of Hamiltonian, which is local here on you know, basically the boundary of x. And when gamma is non-zero, then we cannot approximate by something local, but we can approximate by something which is kind of local after we trace out. So we trace out just one of the subsystems, a small subsystem, and then we get something local, okay? And this kind of mimics this projection that we know we have to do in the case of topological non-trivial systems. So this will be just a consequence of the first result I told you. Let's just see how to get that, because we use some very basic facts about quantum information, which is useful, and I'm sure you know them, but I want to revise them anyway. So one thing that we know is that because of the area law assumption, actually, and we show that later, there's some factorization in the system. So if just the the width field is big enough, bigger than like correlation length, then the state factorizes in this form. So the state on row x, x prime is product, okay? But the state is product, so, but the state overall is pure, right? So we know that the spectrum of row x, x prime is the same as the spectrum of the purifying system, which is row b. So we have this equality, right? And because of this approximation, we know that the spectrum of these two, tensor product, is roughly the spectrum of the boundary. This is all we know, we need actually for the results. But from quantum information, we know something more, which is kind of nice to know in this context, which is what we call Ullmann's theorem. And what it says is the following. It says that because overall we have a pure state, there is actually some isometry from B, this subsystem here, to some like subsystem Bx and subsystem Bx prime, such that if you have our original state, that's our original quantum state, and we apply this unit isometry to B, we kind of get two tensor product states, one between x and the subsystem Bx, the other between, it should be x prime, sorry, between x prime and the subsystem Bx prime, such that the reductions are the right one, the reductions rho x and rho x prime. So that's pretty nice because it's some kind of like isometry between the degrees of freedom of x and x prime into the degrees of freedom of B, right? Which is very much in the spirit of what we want from this bulk boundary correspondence. But here is just some basic facts from quantum information. So how we get now, suppose gamma is zero, then we know from what we just saw before that this rho B, which is this boundary state, is a Fermat state of a local model, and that's it, right? So we get the result in the case of gamma zero. When gamma is not zero, it's a little bit more harder. I don't wanna show it, so you can ask me later. Okay, so now I wanna focus on showing, arguing why this is true, okay? Any questions? Okay, and now going back to the title of the talk, so I will show you that when gamma is zero, this inequality, this equation will follow from strong subadditivity. And it'll be actually quite simple. And if you don't remember, this is strong subadditivity. It's just a relation between entropies of a tripartite quantum system. When gamma is non-zero, it will follow from actually some recent strengthening that we have of strong subadditivity, which is, I will tell you what it is by Fausing and Renner. Sorry? Yes. Thank you. Yeah, okay, so, you know, this is true in some particular cases when, like, strong subadditivity is saturated, but in general, we have to reverse. Yeah. Yeah, it was just like something I put to see who is paying attention. At least one is paying attention, so that's. Thank you. Well, I'll put the right one next slide, I think. Okay, so I want to do this very briefly, but I think it's nice just to mention that strong subadditivity is this very actually powerful entropy inequality, right? There is really a lot of applications. So first in quantum information theory is, we use it every day to prove pretty much like every optimal rate, at least like the converse of every protocol that we know. So channel capacity, distillable entanglement, and so on. So this really is the first thing you have to learn to prove results there. But also more to the point of this school, there's really a lot of recent interesting applications of strong subadditivity to high energy and holography and so on. So we heard a little bit in talks by Cassini and how to use strong subadditivity and Lorentz invariance for getting C theorems for renormalization flows or getting the Bekenstein bound and so on. In the context of holographic entanglement entropy, strong subadditivity is an important test to really just give some evidence that what we have there, the proposal is really entropy and not something else, and many others. We already saw what we're going to see. So this talk is like one more, right? So basically just yet another application of strong subadditivity. Okay, so now is the right one. So how I want to think about strong subadditivity, I want to think as an information theorist. So we have a tripartite state rho ABC, and we can define some quantity, which we call the condition of mutual information of A and C given B. And what is this quantity? It's just this linear combination of entropies. Okay, so entropy of AB plus BC minus ABC minus B. And now you can formally write this in this way. And you can already start right seeing why this might be useful for what we want to do, because this is like the distance of rho ABC to some kind of Fermat state. But it's kind of complicated because first it's not really a state, it's not normalized. And second, if you want to cross-grain it further, right, it's not clear what to do, but we will handle that. So what is strong subadditivity? It's just the fact that this quantity is always positive. Positive, or bigger than zero. Good. So we're going to use that. It has some nice operation interpretations as well. I might mention later, but I don't want to do it now. But now, one question is whether we can improve it, right? This is the best we can do, or actually there is something more interesting we can put here on the right-hand side. And there is, and this is, we can call it stronger subadditivity, but this is a result by Fauzi and Renner from 2 years ago. And what they show is the following. They show that the conditional mutual information is always bigger than half. And now we do some minimizations. Lambda is a channel, so it's just some quantum operation that maps B to BC, okay? So it acts on B and outputs BC. And we look minus log the fidelity between the original tripartite states and the output of this channel if the channel is applied to B. So basically, this is telling us how well we can recover the C subsystem by applying this channel to B. So right, to get some intuition, what this is saying is that if the conditional mutual information is small, is close to zero, then there exists some channel which approximately reconstructs the states. Okay? And in this sense, it makes sense to call this a conditional mutual information, right? Because this is telling us how much correlations are there between A and C given the knowledge of B, right? If this is very small, given the knowledge of B, there should be no correlations, and this is what is happening here, right? We can just reconstruct completely one subsystem just by acting on B. Okay, so keep this in mind, please. So what I said, can reconstruct the state on ABC from reduction on AB by acting on B only. That's a picture. But now, why this is relevant for the problem we're studying here? And the reason is that because of this area law assumption, this condition of the conditional mutual information being small, or of this approximately recoverability, appears naturally in the system. Okay, and we want to explore it. So what we can show is that whenever you have free regions, either splitting of the lattice like this, or just like some sub-region with free regions like that, and the regions have like trivial topology, there is no holes in the middle, we get to the case of holes next slides, then the conditional mutual information is approximately zero. Okay? That's an easy calculation. Let's do for this case. Suppose that it's L by L, they are all L by L. Then that's the definition. Now let's use our area law assumption. So we have this linear term alpha of the all the bound, there should be a plus here. Sorry. So that minus that minus the area of P. What are these areas? This one is 6L, right? Is this one? The other one is 6L as well. The big one, ABC, is 8L. And the B is just 4L. So they cancel. And we just get like the sublinear terms that goes to zero. Okay? So what this is saying is that if area law holds, they say it has some very special properties, right? That we can locally recover. If you like lose a region, we can locally recover by acting on some region nearby. But that's not always the case. And that's what, you know, Kitaev and Presko and Levin, when they showed us. Suppose now that we have this arrangement of regions, where we have A, B, and C, but B has two parts, and there's a hole in the middle. Then in this case, you can do the same calculation. You can just put a definition. The boundary terms will cancel as before. But now we have minus gamma from this one, right, which is this. They are all simply connected. We have minus gamma from this one. They are simply connected. We have minus gamma from this one. But this one, it gives two gamma now because it's two different regions, right? Because we have gamma for each like connected region. So we have one gamma extra here. So we have gamma plus some subleading terms. And so one nice interpretation of the topological entanglement entropy is that it's just the conditional mutual information of this arrangement of the regions, okay? So that's, and we're saying that in words, non-zero topological entanglement entropy gives an obstruction to reconstruct rho ABC from rho AB by only acting on B. Okay. ABC. Oh, right. Oh, right. I guess. Yeah, you're right. Right. It should be two gamma here. Yes. Yes, that's right. Thank you. Yes. Thanks. Yeah, I will correct this later. Okay. So this is what we want to show. Okay. We want to show this equation. And now, Probably I will only show you this case, okay? Let's focus on this case, which is when gamma is zero. And let's see what the problem we want to solve in this case. And now we will get to a very concrete quantum information problem, and we can forget everything about like topological order or everything I said before and just concentrate on this problem, okay? So what's the problem? So we have gamma zero, and in this case, we need to show that rho B on this boundary is close to the thermal state of a local model, assuming what's our assumption? The condition mutual information is small everywhere that we want to hit here, right? So we have some approximate independence. So we have the conditional mutual information of B1 up to Bj minus 1 with respect to Bj plus 1 up to some B2k minus 1, which is the last one. And we condition first on this B2k and also on Bj, and we want this to be approximately zero. Okay, assuming that, you know, this gets closer and closer to zero when the size increases here, right? So this is what we want to, this is our assumption. So basically, we want to understand one-dimensional quantum systems which have this approximate independence property, right? This is what we want to understand. Yes? No. No. So. Yes. Yes, yes. Yes. So, you know, this area law assumption, if you don't have translation invariance, I don't know how much sense it makes, right? But you only have to assume the area law assumption. Right? Because in the area law, you're already saying that, you know, the linear term, the boundary term of the entropy is independent of the choice of the region. That's. Right. Yeah, then you don't need translation invariance, yes. Okay, so this is a problem you understand, one dimension approximate independent quantum states. Let's look at the classical problem, okay, some classical interlude. And this is just the idea of a Markov chain, right? So let's just revise what it is. Oh, this was cut. Okay, so three random variables X, Y, and Z, they have some probability distribution, X, Y, and Z. And we say they form a Markov chain if X and Z are independent condition on Y, okay? So it's what we expect. There is also interpretation in terms of channel, X, Y, and Z, they are Markov. If there is a channel from Y that outputs Y, Z, which recovers the probability distribution, only X and Y, okay? So that's similar to what we saw before quantumly. So that's the picture. We just apply some, we have X and Y, and we apply some physical operation to Y, and we recover the whole probability distribution. So this is what I want to say is that another characterization is just that the conditional mutual information is zero, okay? Simply because you can write the conditional mutual information as the average over all values of Z of the mutual information of X and Y. And because condition on Z, they are products, this is zero, okay? Now I want to show you a result, a classical result, which is exactly the result you'd like to have in the quantum case, okay? And the point would be whether it's true also in the quantum case or not. So suppose you have some Markov network, which is just a bunch of random variables on a graph, such that condition on the neighbors of this of a given vertex, this random variable is independent of all the rest. Okay, so it's a simple object. It would be more interesting actually in the simplest case of a line. So for a line, for example, given x4, condition on x3 and x5, x4 is independent of all the rest of all the other random variables. And now the question is whether there is a nice characterization for this class, and there is. And this is an old result in statistics. It's called Hammersley-Clifford theorem. What it says is basically these Markov networks, they're in one-to-one correspondence with a simple class of objects, which is just Gibbs states of local classical Hamiltonians here, okay? So being a Markov network and being Gibbs state of classical local Hamiltonians here is the same thing. And if you see this is exactly the result we want in the quantum case, right, but for the line. So, right, going back, we want to show this, that if this, all these conditional mutual informations are approximately zero, the state is thermal. So what we want basically is a quantum first, and second an approximate version of this Hammersley-Clifford theorem. But we only care about one dimension, so that will make things simple. Okay, so now maybe it's good to look at quantum Markov chains before proceeding, right? So first, this is what we had classically. Quantum have something very similar. We know that rho ABC is a Markov quantum state if A and C are independent condition on B, okay? But what I mean by that now, right, how you condition a quantum system, there is a precise way of doing that in this case. We just want to find a measurement such that after measuring the subsystem B, they sit on A and C's products. And there is this, by now, classical result by Patrick and collaborators, which says that this implies this decomposition of the states. That I heard Daniel might have used in his talk today, but I still have to watch it online, so I don't know. Right, so basically it says that there is some direct sum decomposition. PK is a probability distribution. And you can decompose the B subsystem as like a direct sum of tensor products such that the correlations of A and C are mediated by B in this way. So in other words, if you measure in this basis and get outcome K, they sit on A and C's products. And the same thing, you can rho ABC is Markov if there is a channel which reconstructs the state perfectly. Now there is a further characterization which is really in the spirit of what we want, right? That rho ABC is Markov. If and only if we can write as the Gibbs states of two local Hamiltonians, one on AB, the other on BC, which is kind of what we want, right? But here, because it's really Markov, so there is no approximations, we can show that the Hamiltonians, they have to commute. Okay, so it's some special kind of Hamiltonians. Then you can even go to more than three quantum states. You can go to a whole network as classically. And we have some, I don't want to get to details, but we have some analogous results to Helmstedt-Clifford, replacing classical Hamiltonians by commuting quantum Hamiltonians. Okay, so it's very analogous, but really it's not about all quantum Hamiltonians, it's about commuting Hamiltonians. If you restrict commuting Hamiltonians, they form a Markov network. If you have a perfect quantum Markov network, then we have Gibbs states of commuting quantum Hamiltonians. So that's nice, but it's a bit disappointing because, right, maybe we want to get some fully quantum formulation, right? We want to get all quantum Hamiltonians. And I don't know how to solve this problem, but I have a conjecture. And by conjecture, I mean I tried to solve it, couldn't, so maybe you can solve it for me. I don't know if I should call it a conjecture, open problem. And it's the following. So suppose you have a quantum states. And okay, we can think in terms of networks, but I want to just restrict to two-dimensional lattice or three-dimensional, so some simple lattice. And we define rho to be a quantum approximate Markov now, if for every split, a tripartite split of the lattice A, B, and C, such that B separates A from C, the condition of mutual information goes to zero when the distance between A and C grows. Okay, so it's right, it's what, and of course, you have to put like quantitatively what you mean here, but I want to leave it open because I don't know what's the right answer. And my conjecture is that this, now this version of quantum Markov, so this quantum approximate Markov networks, they are in one-to-one correspondence with quantum Gibbs states of local models. Okay, so I think that's, if it's true, it would be very nice. I don't know if it's true, but so let me see. Where is the, how much time do I have? Okay, good. This I want to skip. I just want to make sure that number. So there is a very simple result, like a few lines, which is very powerful, that if you look at the mutual information of A with BC in any thermal state at temperature T, this is bounded, there is some area law, this is bounded by the area of the region A divided by temperature and C some constant. Basically what this conjecture is saying is that, at least this direction of the conjecture, is about the saturation of this area law. We understand how fast, right, we know that when C starts growing, right, this has to saturate because it's monotonically increasing and there is an upper bound, which is fixed. So we know it has to saturate. The question is how fast it saturates, okay? And the conjecture is saying that it saturates fast enough, basically what it was saying. It's saying that for Gibbs state it saturates like at a good rate. So okay, I don't know how to solve the general problem, but I know how to solve the one-dimensional problem, which is what I promised you before. So this is like some approximate quantum Markov chain R thermal. Okay, this is like one way to put it. So the result has two directions. Let me show you each one of them now, discuss each one of them. So we have, again, quantum systems of qubits on a line. Now we have a we split the system into A, B, C, as follows. And then if H is a local Hamiltonian on n qubits, we have this bound. The conditional mutual information of A and C given B, it decreases exponentially in the square root of the size of B. This means the number of qubits on B. I don't know if it's tight, maybe, I would expect exponential, but I'm not sure. And there's a prefect which is prebabbed. It's like dub, you know, like only when B is exponentially big in beta in 1 over T, then it starts to hit off. I don't know if this is tight either, but this is what we get. Yeah, they're just universal constants that I like 4 and 3.1. I don't. So, yeah, no, so there is a dependence on the locality as well, and there is a dependence on the locality here, and I didn't put, but it would go, you have a prefactor here, which is exponential in the locality as well, I think. But like, you know, if the locality is constant, then it's just, yeah, it doesn't matter. Good point, good question. So at zero temperature, this becomes trivial, the bound, right? And right, because this diverges, right? And it has to, because we know examples of zero temperature, we know examples of ground states of local models which do not satisfy this problem. Okay, basically, you can make explicit construction as well, but one good way to put it is that we have this QMA hard problems in one dimension, was proven by Doritz and others. So basically, you can arrange to do pretty much whatever you want there. So, yeah. But you can even construct simpler examples where this fails. So the finite temperature is important. So there is also the converse. It's a little bit more complicated, but let me explain. So we have the formulation, right? There are more numbers. So we have a quantum state on n qubits, bro, such that now for every split that we choose of ABC, with B bigger than M, some number M, integer M, the conditional mutual information of AC given B is smaller than epsilon. Okay, so that's our promise now. Then we can prove that if you look at the relative entropy distance of rho to the set of local thermal states, and I'll tell you how local they are here, then this is small. And how is small? Epsilon times n over m. Okay, so this is not trivial when epsilon decreases fast enough, right? When epsilon is smaller than 1 over n, for example, or something. How local? Well, the locality is 2m. Okay, so there is this parameter m, and this determines the locality that of the final Hamiltonian that you get. Okay. Any questions here? Okay. All right, so what I want to do now in the last 5 or so minutes is just to prove, right, okay, this is not what, we didn't need that for the main result I showed you before, right? What we needed was this part. So actually this is harder to prove than this one, so luckily we only have to concentrate on this one, and this is what I want to show you. And this finally is where we're going to use strong subadditivity to prove it, okay? And it will be pretty simple. You'd be like a few lines. So let me show you how to do that. We have a state on a line, right? And now we want to show that if this condition is true, if the conditional mutual informations are always smaller than epsilon, we can write the state close to a thermal state of a local model. So let's just split the layers into regions of m qubits, call them x1, x2, x3, and so on. And now let's just define another state on the lattice sigma, which acts on this subsystem, which is the maximum entropy states consistent with these constraints. So we look at a set of all states for which the marginals on region xi and xi plus 1 are the same as the marginal of the density matrix rho. So this is a set of states, right? There is at least one state rho there. There might be more. And we look at the state which maximizes the von Neumann entropy. And now some facts. One basic fact from statistical mechanics, like from James, from 57 actually, is that these states, they have a nice characterization. Namely, they are thermal states of local model where the locality is the same as the locality of the linear constraints that you put, okay? So because here, all these constraints, they only deal with like 2m qubits. Each one of these local terms only acts on 2m qubits. So that's, that's a well-known fact. It's not very hard to prove, actually, but it's very standard, right? So it's basically the maximum entropy principle, right? So given a state with some linear constraints, the one that maximizes the entropy is thermal. That's one fact. The other one is that this is what we're interested in, right? We're interested in minimizing over all local Hamiltonians the relative entropy distance of rho to the set of Gibbs states. We can choose any state we want here. Sigma, we just saw, is a particular state in this set. So we can just put sigma here, and we get this equation, right? We get minus entropy of rho, minus trace rho log sigma. But now what's happening here? So sigma has this Gibbs form, So log of sigma is just the Hamiltonian. But this Hamiltonian right, is a sum of local terms, where each local term only acts on nearby regions. So we can replace rho here by sigma, because rho and sigma have the same bipartite marginals. So we can replace here rho by sigma and get the entropy of, did I reverse? Anyway, right, yeah, we get the entropy of sigma here, okay? So I just change the order. So in the end, it's nice, because what we want to compare now is just the entropy of the maximum entropy states with the entropy of rho. And if then this entropy is small, then we get what we want, okay? So maybe last slide. Let's show how to do that. Then we just apply strong subadditivity many times. We have the entropy in sigma, the maximum entropy states, the whole lattice. We can apply strong subadditivity once here, that's the entropy of x1, x2, minus the entropy of x2, plus the entropy of x2 up to xn over m, right? Just apply it once. And now we can just keep applying it, right? Because now we have exactly the same thing, but only involving subsystems x2 up to xn over m. So we apply it again. We get the same terms as here, and here, right, we get entropy of x2, x3, entropy of x3, and again, something only involving x3 and so on. We keep applying. This is what we get in the end, in the state sigma. But now the nice thing, this is a combination of entropies that only cares about, like, you know, regions, nearby regions, xi and xi plus 1. But we know sigma and rho have the same reduced density matrix there. So we can just change sigma by rho here. So we change sigma by rho here. But now rho, right, what is our assumption on rho in words? Is that it approximately saturates strong subadditivity in all the cuts that we need, right? So we can just reverse the order here. And every time we apply strong subadditivity in the other direction, we get some error, but the error is epsilon. So we do that. Each time we get some error epsilon, how many times we apply? N over M, and that gives the bound, okay? So that's it. Doris. Repeat the question, please. I don't know if you can understand. Yes, yes. Yes. Ah, yes. So that's the general version, okay? I wrote it. So suppose you have some quantum state sigma, and you have linear constraints on this quantum state sigma. So MI is any observable you want, and you just fix the expectation value of these quantum states on this observer MI to BCI. And now you want to look at the state which maximizes the entropy satisfying these linear constraints. And this would be exactly a Gibbs state of this form, where lambda I are numbers and MIs appear there, right? So this is just indeed a particular case of the general results. Okay, that's what I want to show you. This other thing I won't show you, this direction, we didn't need anyway, right? So, but maybe to connect what I said before, the way we prove it is we show there is some recovery channel from B to BC for any one-dimensional Gibbs states, which reconstructs the total Gibbs states if you're given a reduction of the Gibbs state. And that's used some, it's called like some quantum belief propagation equations that Matt Hastings derived some in 2008, I think, and they are useful here. So that's all. So I show you that the locality of entanglement entropy, which by this I mean area law, implies some other notions of locality as well, which are interesting. First, the locality of the boundary states and of the entanglement spectrum, or actually in this case, it gives some obstruction to the locality of the boundary states, right? I show you that quantum approximate Markov chains are thermal. There are many open questions. One, right, which suits very here. I would like to have some applications to high energy physics or holography maybe of these results. I don't know. So more technical questions. I proved something about the entanglement spectrum by using two copies, right? Is that really needed? I don't know. Then there is this conjecture about approximate Markov chain. It would be nice to know if they are true in higher dimensions or not. And lastly, this thermal states, what you can show is that it has the same on-site symmetries as the original many-body pure state. So it's a kind of mapping from a two-dimensional quantum system at zero temperature to a one-dimensional quantum system at thermal equilibrium. Perhaps this is useful for like classifying phases or symmetry-protected phases. I don't know, but I would like to explore this. So thank you.
We have time for questions.
Yes. Sure, let me just go back. It's a little bit, but it'll be fast. It's on, where is it? Here, right? In this result, I needed two copies to get a local model, right? You need two copies of the spectrum, yeah, right? So I don't know what you're thinking about this. You have row x, then you take row x, tensor row x. Now you look at the spectrum of these tensor products, and that matches the spectrum of a local model. But maybe the same is true if you don't take this doubling, okay? I don't know. But for the reason you said, it might be true, right? Because maybe you have to consider some chirality, because yeah, exactly. So, but it would be nice to, you know, if it's not true, to get some example which shows that you really need it, so yeah. Yes. When gamma is zero, yes. You're talking when gamma is non-zero?
Yeah.
When gamma is non-zero is a good question. What else you can say? Okay. Right. What people see. Yeah. So when gamma is zero, the boundary state is really like this formal state of a local model. When gamma is non-zero, what was observed numerically is that you have these local parts, as here, of the Hamiltonian of, you know, it's a Gibbs state of some local model plus some universal non-local parts, which is responsible for the topological order. So this we cannot recover here. That would be nice to get. And there is some universality properties of these non-local parts. But I.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
Is it known whether the lower bound for the conditional mutual information that we have for a very large system would scale? So I'm thinking about the hologram.
Yes.
Would scale sort of the.
You mean scale linearly with the. Okay, I show you one lower bound. There are bare lower bounds, and this bare lower bound is very similar, but it's some kind of relative entropy distance between the real state and the recovered state. Not really the quantum one, but it's called like measure relative entropy. And this I expect to scale linearly with the system. It's scaling the same way as the condition mutual information. So I think, yeah, I think this, indeed in some context, I think this better bound might be more useful. I didn't mention it, but yeah.
Do we have more questions? Okay, great then. Let's thank Fernando again.
Thank you.